There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ciao, benvenuto. It's one of those Ned Goes to Italy podcasts again, I'm afraid. I'll probably rope in Chat Stevens, hopefully at some point, because I'm working with him all week. But yeah, today's Wednesday. I arrived in Milan yesterday, picked up a hire car. That was an adventure, as it always is, with the Italian company that has the contract to provide cars for RCS. That's another story. Don't want to do them down, but it was quite amusing. Anyway, bundle over to this little town of Caluso, where I've been before, where Matt and I, it's one of those things, a very bike racing thing. It's just we're approaching the hotel a couple of hundred meters from it. He suddenly went, oh hang on, been here before. Just by pure coincidence, we're staying at exactly the same hotel we stayed in the night before, commentating on Gran Piemonte, which is the warm-up race to Il Lombardia. And today, we're commentating on Milano-Torino, which is a warm-up race for Milan-San Remo. Or at least it is nowadays. They've changed its place in the calendar. It used to be in the autumn, now it's in the spring. And it used to be an uphill finish in the Superga, and the outskirts of Turin. And now it's mostly, normally, a bit of a sprint fest, although that's not really the case today because there's a few quite hard climbs on the in the final 20-30k. But yeah, so we stayed here before. We stayed here and it was memorable, this place, for a few reasons. One is it's on a big main road, as you can probably hear, but that's quite standard. Even though we're in a beautiful part of Italy, they've managed to find a really ugly little, specifically ugly corner of it. But they're lovely, friendly staff, big Sardinian family who run this place, even though we're in Piemont. When we were here in the autumn, Cofidis were here as well, so I remember striking up a conversation with young Harrison Wood, the Devon rider who rides for Cofidis, and having a chat with Guillaume Martin as well, ahead of Lombardia and Gran Piemonte. He got disqualified. We were talking about that last night, Guillaume Martin. I think he finished third or fourth in Gran Piemonte or something like that, and got disqualified. And neither of us could remember why. Have to look that up. So we had a lovely... And the other thing that this hotel is notable for is the cooking. Obviously, it was great last night. We had all the Italian crew with us and had a lovely 17-course meal. We were told by the lady who owns this place all about the wine after which the hotel is named. This is the Hotel Erbaluce in Caluso. And Erbaluce is this particular type of white wine variety that grows in this part of Piemont, but actually specifically in Caluso. So it's associated with Caluso. And I can verify that because this morning I went for a run in this beautiful, warm, spring-like sunshine. And I ran through all the old Erbaluce vineyards where a lot of farm workers were out just starting to cut the vines back now in the middle of March quite brutally, but they're tall vines and they look very old. Erbaluce is the white grape variety from here. And in the distance, not so far away, the Alps, which have unusual amounts of snow in them, and in this bright sunshine the snow line is very low. It looks startlingly beautiful, and we're very close to where they just rise out of nowhere in the distance. And Milano-Torino. So just looking down the start list, Cavendish is here. There's quite a few sprinters. Demar, Coquart, probably the headline sprinters who are here. But I don't know whether they're going to make it over the climbs. It could be that a rider like Alberto Bettiol, Mark Hirschi, or a rider a bit like that, it would be more suited to today's race. It's going to be quite unpredictable, which is good. But also puts the fear of God into me, because it could be that some really quite random group of riders, gets up the road, attacks, and actually fights it out for the race win. And here he is. Matt has just emerged, freshly showered, toweled down, and ready to go after his Brompton, his folding bicycle ride this morning. Matt, I've just had a look at the start list.
Yeah.
Well, it's a kind of Milano-Torino start list, but then I had a look at the slightly more detail at the actual severity of the climbs, and they're quite punchy. Do you want to have a look?
Yeah.
Can I just grab a nut?
Yeah.
You've got a nice little selection of healthy nonsense.
I've kind of made quite big inroads, as you can see already, because breakfast wasn't amazing here, was it today?
It was. There's a croissant, which was fine. And then a selection of dried toast in packets, only redeemed by the fact they had some honey, and that the coffee was lovely. But no, it was a very basic breakfast. Blimey, they're quite pointy, Ned.
So this one here, so they're both within the last 25 kilometres. This one here is 3.5K at an average of something like 7%.
That's going to...
Maybe more. And then this one's a bit more, this is the same sort of length, but about 4%.
That's going to be hard.
Too hard for most of the sprinters.
Yeah, I think it is. I did message Mr. Cavendish this morning.
Mark Cavendish.
And I did ask him how he was, but he just said, he didn't actually tell me. He just said, hi, hopefully see you at the race. So I think he's seen the pointy end. And the thing is, he knows, isn't he?
That he's won this race.
Grippy. Yeah,
he's won this race in the past, so it would be slightly disappointing to him. He'll probably be like looking at the profile a bit like us for the first time last night or this morning going, ah.
Yeah, because I looked at it a little while ago and it didn't quite, it just had one gentle bump. I don't know if they've had a play with the course. I mean, I've seen, it's not super severe, but I think it's severe enough to whittle it down slightly, and some of the bigger sprinters are going to get tailed off.
I was just saying into this podcast machine that you couldn't hear because you were still inside the hotel before you walked outside to join me. I was just saying, it's one of these actually, looking at the start list and this finish, it, as a commentator, slightly puts a fear of God into me, because you could get a group of like 20 riders with some really kind of unusual riders there represented, unexpected riders clipping off the front, and actually that's it, that's the final selection. It could be a bit the win is Intermarché.
I mean, arguably, if it does come down to a reduced bunch kick with a lot of the smaller teams there, with several of the teams, they've got like maybe two or three rods are reasonably fast. They're the worst sorts of finishes as a commentator, aren't they?
Yeah.
So arguably, there's more pressure on Milano Torino as a lead commentator than Milan San Remo, I think, in terms of the hardness.
No,
we
know which riders we're going to see at the front of Milan San Remo on the Poggio. We don't really know in Milano Torino.
No. So there's it's like almost, I wouldn't call it a lucky dip, but there's a slight tension actually that can sense. But I think we're going to be fine. I thought we were going to be fine.
That's because we're just very good at what we do.
I think we're exceptionally reasonable at what we do.
Yeah.
And we're buoyed by what a beautiful day. Have you described the scene? Because it's
I have. I've waxed lyrical at the snow line and all that. So I've painted a picture with words, Matt, which is what podcasting is.
That's what you do.
Yeah.
They are. They're like albums without music.
They are. Yeah. I'm gonna put some music into the edit now. I think just to kind of like get us into the next bit of the edit.
Indeed, I'm just going to have a cashew as a segue.
Come prima, più di prima, t'amerò. Per la vita, la mia vita ti darò.
Well, it's like we never went away, really, to be perfectly honest. This feels very normal, being sat next to Matt. In our office, effectively our mobile office. This will be home to us in for the entire month of May. And alongside us in the commentary position, Francesco and Alessandra Pataki. They've turned up. Everybody, you probably hear them in the background getting quite animated already, aren't they? Even though the commentary hasn't started. But yeah, we all piled up. It's a really nice little town, this, isn't it? Salassa. It's a lovely little place, but it's not replete with cafes.
No, we had to use a generic search engine to help us find a cafe. We eventually found one, and you had an arancini, didn't you? Which took about 20 minutes to warm through.
Can I be honest with you?
How was it?
Wasn't warm through. They kind of forgot about it, I think. And then when they saw me coming back and kind of like with my babyish Italian suggesting that, they shoved it in the microwave, but maybe just for 30 seconds or something. So it was quite vaguely warm on the outside, but still chilled on the inside.
Oh, I'm really sorry, because I...
because they asked me if you wanted it cold, eh? And I said, yep, C. And they took it upon themselves. So I waited there for 10, 15 minutes. Anyway, I didn't have one because they're just highly dense, aren't they?
Very dense. But that's kind of the point. They're lunch. Lunch in a tennis ball shape and sized thing, aren't they? They're the tennis ball lunch.
And really portable. Apparently, they used to, I don't know if this is true, but potentially it could have been, they used to roll it down hills and you could just pick it up. It's like a portable lunch, but only in one direction.
Well, I think there used to be a big race down the Passo del Torchino, the entire length of it, didn't they?
Yes.
In the counter direction from Milan San Remo. So it's quite a long, that's like a 40 kilometre descent, effectively, isn't it? But of a significant enough gradient to allow the Arancino ball to keep rolling. And you used to get people running after it. You used to get like the Devon cheese rolling thing.
Yeah,
so
I mean, there's a lot of injuries, etc. But
that's why I had to stop. There were there was 1 year, I think 12 people died.
It was awful. It was awful. I'd rather not dwell on it, to be honest with you. But I think, but what it did, and the Arancini evolved, because the first few, you know, instance of that particular occasion, there was a lot of asymmetric arancinis. They went off course.
Biased. They had a bias on them. Yeah.
So it basically, there was this artisanal kind of a little mini industry that sprung up about getting completely and utterly spherical arancinis. Yeah. So they could just have a very straight trajectory. Yeah. But it took a few years. It took about 7 years to perfect it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's right. It's well researched. Not long now. In fact, the countdown is on, isn't it? I've got about 10 minutes, maybe a bit less before we start commentating. I'm quite looking forward to it. It's our first race of the year together.
Yeah, it doesn't, like you were just saying before we went off on an Arancini diversion, it doesn't feel like, I mean, hit the music's playing, we're obviously about 5 minutes away from the broadcast beginning, a little bit loud for my liking, but no, it doesn't feel like we've been away. Last one for us two was in Lombardia, wasn't it? And it feels
similar
like it
weather.
Was last week. Yeah, similar weather. I've had to put suntan cream on. I slightly burnt my nose and cheeks this morning on my bike, and it's gorgeous. It's like 20, 21 degrees out. It's lovely.
Yeah, it's absolutely lovely. The race situation at the moment, we've got about 60 kilometres still to run. The significant little climbs towards the end of Milano Torino, we haven't really got to them yet. There's three climbs. One of them is 4.6 kilometres at 3.9%. That should be okay. Then comes the really difficult one, just inside 30 kilometres to go, to Prascosano climb. That's 3 kilometres in length, is 7%, 6.9%. So that's where I think the action will be. And then they'll continue that over the Colloreto Castelnuovo climb, which is at 10.8 kilometres to go. That's, again, it's 3.8 kilometres at 3.9%. So that's kind of like, for a lot of the sprinters, that they think they can back their chances, I think, of getting over that one. But I think the middle climb is where the damage could potentially be done. And by the looks of it, UAE Team Emirates, who literally don't have a sprinter here, but they've got Mark Hirschi, I think he's probably their out-and-out leader here. They're riding, so at Astana, Kazakhstan, but I don't think it'll be for Mark Cavendish, realistically.
They've got a pretty decent team. I think if Mark manages to hold on to the groups, they'll ride from in the final. But with Lutsenko on board,
he stands out.
Options. He's a real punchy rod. It's still searching for his first win. Cav's already won in Colombia. But yeah, there's not really much of a recovery before that second climb. But it's actually a better field than I thought. You've got the likes of Alexander Kristoff here as well, Casper Van Uden, Ivan Garcia Cortina is here. You know, it's... And I reckon... Do you know what? I'm going to stick my neck out. Cockard's going to take this.
that's a neck being right stuck out there, because he's not a prolific winner, is he?
No.
Let's be honest. I've had brief contact with Never Stray as Far's Charlie Quarterman, which was good, because he's retired now. Ex-team Coratec, rode the Giro last year. Charlie, if you're listening, thank you very much for the information, the insight information you gave me on one of the three men in the breakaway, Marco Murgano, the 25-year-old from Genoa. Apparently he has a big fan base that follow him around. That was interesting. He's there with a guy from France. Who's actually really good.
More generic than that, please, Ned.
Lyon. He's from Lyon. Matteo Vercher. He's actually, of the three riders who are up the road, I think he's probably the best. A couple of good results for him. And Q36.5's Marcel Camprubi, the Spanish rider. He's the youngest of the three. Anyway, those guys, they'll be reeled in. They've only got a lead of a couple of minutes.
And they've been going quite quickly. I'm just looking at the average speed so far. 44.2k to go. 69k to go. We're not even on air yet. And you've got that sort of preamble with colour. So I reckon we're going to be commentating on about 58k's.
Just lap it up, mate. Milan San Remo.
Am I smiling?
Yeah.
I am, aren't I? Yeah.
That's a lot of detail you've just had, podcast listeners, about Milano Torino. Probably an unnecessary amount. At the end of it all, we'll tell you who wins.
We will.
Yes, please, sir.
And to warm applause from everybody gathered here at the finish line in Salassa, Alberto Bettio picks up Milano Torino for EF Education Easy Post for Italy and for himself. That was a special win by a special rider.
Oh God, it's choked on one of those.
Real life, mate. Real life. There's some.
What are these things? Because we've got bruschettas here.
These things. Just the sound of stuff moving around. I mean,
you'll probably wonder what on earth we're talking about, but we are referring to a little platter of food that comes with a lot of restaurants, bars, in France and Italy, Spain. Nibbles along with the alcoholic beverage. You've got a wine on the go. I've got a beer, and there's, well, a lot of stuff, isn't there? Mm. We've got some. Bell peppers with fish paste in.
Yep.
We've got some. We've got some ham. We've got some cheese. We've got some.
What's that? The red stuff.
That's some. That's some salsa, isn't
salsa.
It?
Salsa. Yeah. Tortilla chips. Some little bread.
Nameless things.
Actually,
nameless bread.
Yeah,
things.
The little curly things. Yeah.
And some little dry bruschetta, and as well as some
pickles.
Yeah. And it's lovely.
Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah, and we sat on a cobbled.
Not quite a square, but kind of a cobbled square. In a little town not far from the hotel, and it's what it's all about, mate. Isn't
the little
it?
Town that you rode through and I ran through this morning.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
We did. We
know
it quite well, don't we?
We do.
We know it intimately well.
Yeah. It's really lovely. There's the only thing that's slightly upsetting. Yeah. Yeah, was the kind of piercing sound of the two-stroke moped. But that is European, isn't it? That, I mean, there's always going to be kids bazzing around on little scooters.
Yeah.
But apart from that. It's been a wonderful afternoon and a lovely day. The whole day's been great, hasn't it?
Mm, absolutely. Good race. Enjoyed it.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Should cut down on the eating noises because people are quite phobic about that. You remember?
Somebody complained, didn't they?
Yeah, big time.
So, you don't mind sipping, but I will stop crunching while we're podding.
Yeah, if I see you going in for a sip, I'll keep talking and angle it away a little bit. Well, one of the headlines I took away from today was the fact that by what I could glean from the evidence presented to me was that Alessandro Petacchi, Alijet, drives a black transit van. That's his personal vehicle.
It was a Mercedes Sprinter.
Oh, was it?
Black. Yeah, it was a van, and I thought it'd be at least like in a Lamborghini or some sort of sport Porsche or a sports car.
Yeah.
But it's quite a practical van, which did surprise me. And I don't think he was happy that we saw him climb in, alight or the other way around, isn't it? So maybe we'll get a bit of a debrief at Milan San Remo to ask. I think we should just ask him about his van.
Yeah, I had a quick exchange in pure Italian with him actually at the end of the race.
Nice.
Just as I was leaving the booth, having collected all my notes, and he was in the doorways. The Rai commentary team spend a lot of time in the doorway, neither outside it nor actually in the booth.
But it's behind
they're
the
just
door
kind of in the doorway.
Yeah, it's weird that
they neither leave nor enter.
It's so strange.
It's like this hinterland, isn't it? That they occupy for vast periods of time, but we're either in the booth
or out.
Or we're out.
Yeah, we're not hanging around the doorway.
No. because they are.
Yeah,
that's one of the reasons. Also, it's wrong.
Yeah,
get your mind up, Alison.
It's a hazard.
How did he ever operate in a bunch sprint if he was so indecisive? You know, do I go? Do I follow that wheel?
Maybe that's the very point. Maybe he was on the cusp of neither one nor the other, so could flip between the two very, very easily.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it.
Yeah. Just on. So it's constantly in a state of readiness to either leave or enter. Where we were like, I'll have to get our stuff and leave, or then re-enter. There's a lot of fuss. Where he's just like,
I think you might be right, and he's carried that into his commentary career.
Yeah.
About hanging around in doorways. But on my way out, I had to kind of, you know, almost push past him borderline. He's quite a tall, imposing figure.
He is.
But so I thought, I'll have a natter with him. So I said, hey. That was my opening line. Gave him that.
But then how many did you give it?
Just one. Yeah. That was enough. And then I said, una bella vittoria, right?
I heard that.
Did you see that?
And I actually was packing my stuff and I heard, a bolting's on a roll here, is what I thought.
I followed it up as well. I said,
Bettini. What was his name? Who won it? Bettiol.
Bettiol. Sorry, three minutes. Yeah.
Bettiol. I said Bettiol. Ah, molto forte, huh?
Eh?
Eh? And then I said molto, and I pointed at my head. And I wanted to say, clever, but I thought, is clever one of those international words that also works in Italian? So I put an Italian accent on it, and I went, è molto clever, clever.
You didn't say that, you didn't say intelligente?
No, because I think, I'd be surprised if clever isn't an Italian word as well.
Ooh, what was his surprised. Response? Did you just look bemused?
He understood,
partly because of the pointing to
English.
The head.
Luckily for you, he speaks reasonable English, doesn't he?
He nodded, looked sagely at me, he went, ma forte. Forte, grande. And I went, yeah, and then I went, ciao.
That was it.
Because he's a man, I like him actually, but he's a man of few words. But he will give you his time, won't he? But it's before he then just sort of moves off into the...
Right.
But he's
efficient,
pleasant,
isn't it? It's efficient. We'd kind of like, that's all we needed to say, wasn't it? A great victory, and it's very strong.
You can't just walk by and not acknowledge. I mean, the thing is, it was a Molto Forte victory, wasn't it? Yeah. Whatever way you slice it, it was a cracking win.
Yeah.
And the most entertaining edition that I've commentated on Milano-Torino.
Yeah.
And go along with that.
Yeah.
Well-designed course.
And it skipped along really lovely. From a commentary perspective, we came on air, didn't we? About 63Ks to go, which is great anyway.
Oh,
they've been trapping along quite nicely. And then for the race to be primarily active and on was... It finished in a flash, really, didn't it?
Yeah.
From a work perspective, it was over.
Yeah.
Which was great.
Yeah. Yeah, and at one point we got rather confused by big globules of slightly drying blood and like snot mixed up with snot dripping from the nose of Mark Hirschi.
Yeah. Well, he had blood on his right hand, so with the camera shot was...
Oh, he's gone down.
Yeah. And then I couldn't see any marks on him, and then our little producer, director...
Kern.
Belgium. Mic'd in and said, maybe his nose.
Yeah.
And maybe he's a bleeding nose where he's wiping it with his hand.
He's right as well.
Yeah, and then you acknowledged him in your commentary. And then I acknowledged your acknowledgement as well by saying, yeah, I was thinking that it might have been that, but we didn't say it.
Yeah.
So it's covering all bases, really. But so that was a key point. He looked rather pale, didn't he? But I think he might have had suntan cream on.
The director, come on.
Mark Hirschi.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, it was... it's a good effort, wasn't it? God, it was a good attack, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was brilliant.
Proper banging attack, that was.
I don't
know
what it was about it, but it was like... There was something about the differential in speed that just made it look absolutely breathtaking. Mm. I haven't seen an attack like I can't think of a... It was almost... Actually, it reminded me of a big Pogacar attack.
Yeah.
He reminded me a little bit of Tadej today.
It did. It was a little bit of Tadej about it. And I'm really... I don't like using guns as an analogy because I'm not a big fan of guns, but I did say like a bullet from a gun because it was that quick, wasn't it? It was like, oof. And not one... suggestion of a response from anybody, was there? They just looking
threw the
around,
race into disarray.
I think the lad on the front increased his pace slightly, and he actually dropped the lad who was on his wheel, the two UAE guys who were chasing. But then, within a matter of 500 metres, he gained 20 seconds, hadn't he? And then TT'd it all the way to line. But we still had a real, really quite thrilling finale. And yeah.
The absolute baffler was Borna Hansgrohe, wasn't it? We were so baffled by them. But that final selection was made, and they had five riders there.
Was 10th, wasn't it, as well?
Yeah, they only got one top 10. Eighth, maybe? Don't know.
Yeah.
Only one in the top 10 and nowhere near the front, actually. And, we knew Anton Palzer, because we know a bit about him, and we obviously knew Bob Jungels, but there were three young Germans. Well, one was an Austrian, two Germans. That we didn't know anything about.
But it was clear. Good bike riders.
Jungels and Palzer were riding for one of them, and we were like desperately trying to figure out if any of them had a fast finish, and none of them do, like in terms of what they've achieved. So it was really, that was a total baffler to us.
Yeah, just to give a bit of BTC, a bit of behind the scenes, we were after the finish.
Might be BTS, though.
BTS. Yeah. BTS. In terms of thought process as a commentator and not knowing. The identification of several riders. We knew who these riders were, but we were firstly hoping Bettiol would win because he deserved to, but also hoping he wouldn't get caught and one of the Bora guys wins and we misidentify them.
Yeah,
that was what possibly could have happened there, because they were almost identical in
where
they sat on the bike.
Very, very similar, kind of generic Bora riders, and all looked a little bit like Nico Dentz.
Yes.
On the bike.
Yeah.
A little bit rangy, you know, but they were all climbers, and so that is your primary worry and concern, isn't it, as a commentator, will I get the shout the right name?
Yeah,
the
line? I mean, it's like, if it had happened, it would have been, and Borah have taken it.
Yeah,
and then helicopter shot, then identified them from the number, and you're in, and nobody had been none the wiser.
Yeah. That's where a good co-commentator comes into it as well, because the lead commentator does the hedging the bets thing over the line, and then you're right there as a co-commentator.
Sometimes
trying to help.
A piece of paper. It's like sliding it in so you can just carry it on. I'd name them as soon as possible. It happened with me and Jose. And she won't mind me saying this. It happened in the Tour de Maritime du Var. And one of the lads.
This is Jose Bain, who commentates with you on Eurosport.
And she was calling the finish. And called it very well. Benoit Cosnefroy won the stage, but he was on the left-hand side and the camera was facing forward, so it was a frontal shot. He was off screen, and we couldn't see him. And it only panned out the last minute.
And
we could only say, AG2R.
It's a hospital pass, isn't it?
Yeah, so, but it's finishes like that, and there were three AG2R riders sprinting, and it was Cosnefroy who won it. But again, it's fun and games, isn't it? It's what we do. But sometimes you're hoping for quite selfish reasons for there to be a winner, so it makes your job slightly easier. That's my point, anyway.
Yeah. So Betty all suited our purposes down to the grounds. And there we go, and on we go. And like you're off to... So tomorrow I've got to drop you into Turin, as well as Lisa, who works with us.
That's fine.
So, because you've got an appointment in the evening, early evening, with Maître Van der Poel.
I have indeed, yeah. I'm doing a quick Eurosport gig. Yep. To grab we've got a 10-minute slot with him to interview him tomorrow, so that'd be cool. And then I'm going to get the train from Pavia down to San Remo, and I get in about quarter to midnight.
Right.
So it'll be a late one for me, but it'll be nice to have had a chat with Van der Poel and seen him and got a sense of what he's about, because that'll be the team hotel. So I might do a bit of mooching and see who I can speak to.
I'm kind of like, so that once I've dropped you off, I've kind of got a day of travel, really. I've got to drive to San Remo, but I also don't have to be in San Remo. So I'm kind of thinking in the back of my head, I might go and explore and just find a little hotel somewhere, or bed and breakfast, or a little...
Well, so you might actually stay over...
Yeah, somewhere
around.
And
then come in the morning.
Because I know San Remo.
Yeah.
Been there quite often. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
It's nice,
I'm going to be there on Friday night anyway.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll just do something off, just go off.
You could probably find somewhere quite reasonable and quite lovely, yeah.
I'll go to France.
Could do. It's not that far away.
Just go to France.
You could go to Nice.
Not Nice. No, but somewhere. I don't know. So I might go and explore. I might do an exploring thing.
You're not going to get lost the way like you did briefly. You didn't get fully lost, did you?
I'll try not.
Where was it again? Where the Giro goes to very regularly and will again this year. Where you got your football top from?
Oh, that place.
Naples.
Napoli.
You're not going to go that far, are you, for Christ? That's a long way. Don't go to Napoli. That's a long way. That's hundreds and hundreds of kilometres. We'll look forward to your reportage.
Okay.
And keep you posted where you are.
All right.
You'll probably no doubt find a nice church to have a look around, which I know you're fond of.
I saw one today. It was quite underwhelming, actually, in Salassa. Okay. I went to the church there. I was a little bit... barely spent 20 seconds in there. I looked around and thought, this is actually quite... For the first time, I don't often feel this. I thought this is quite a gloomy place to be.
Right, okay.
And just went out again because it's so lovely outside. And this first bit of sunshine of the year has just been brilliant. Anyway, I'm going to stop podding for this section now because all these nibbles that we can't really eat on mic.
I'm making my mouth water.
Let's just get stuck in. Yeah. Ogni giorno, ogni istante, dolcemente, ti dirò come prima, più di prima, come prima, più di prima t'amerò. Well, it's the day after Milano-Torino now, and I've parted company briefly with Matt and with my other colleagues from RCS. And I've just gone off on my own overnight because don't have to be in San Remo until tomorrow, the day before the race, which is Friday. So over dinner last night, I was talking to my friend Massimiliano, and I was just discussing how I might just take the car and just discover somewhere I'd never been before. And he said, "Oh, well, why don't you go and stay at the flat that belongs to my friend Francesco down in Camoli near Genoa?" And I said, "Well, could I?" And he goes, "Well, I'll message him." And then he showed me a picture of Camoli, and I went, "Could I?" And here I am with this old apartment up on the fifth floor of an old townhouse that faces onto the bay, this tight little bay with its stony beach and its little peninsula at one end with the basilica, the minor basilica of Santa Maria, and the old castle as well. And I'm looking out over a setting sun and a peaceful scene. And I'm just finishing. I'm going to cook for myself, actually, tonight. Just a simple pasta thing. And I think I'm in heaven. I think I might be in heaven. I've got about 100 pages of Germinal to read. And that's going to be my evening. Bliss. Well, I've finished Germinal, and what a mighty, mighty piece of work it is. I think many people regard it as Zola's masterpiece, probably his greatest work, and that's saying something, because his output was prodigious, and his status, not during his lifetime really, but afterwards, as one of the greatest 19th century French writers is hard to argue with. His attention to detail, his poetic language, the way he balances the story, the story of this miners' strike in the 1860s in the Second Empire, the characterizations, the violence, the way he allows you to develop empathy across the board for the strikers and the bourgeoisie, and ultimately the book's humanity, and that's its strength. And it genuinely, if you're going to watch Paris-Roubaix, you've got time to read Germinal before that if you haven't already, because it is so relevant to the bike race, because the strike plays out in that very territory around Valenciennes, through which, just by the Forest of Arenberg, Paris-Roubaix passes over those cobbled roads. And just to imagine what had gone on until all the mines closed underneath those roads as you watch Paris-Roubaix will add a huge extra dimension. This, by the way, this is how the book ends. Everywhere, seeds were swelling and lengthening, cracking open the plain in their upward thrust for warmth and light. The sap was rising in abundance with whispering voices. The germs of life were opening with a kiss. On and on, ever more insistently, his comrades were tapping, tapping, as though they too would be rising through the ground. On this youthful morning, in the fiery rays of the sun, the whole country was alive with this sound. Men were springing up. A black, avenging host was slowly germinating in the furrows, thrusting upwards for the harvests of future ages. And very soon the germination would crack the earth asunder. From Billy Bragg singing the Internationale to Yvette Horner, of course, so intimately associated with the Tour de France, the French star of the accordion in the 1950s, playing her Marche des Mineurs, the March of the Miners. Anyway, that's moved us on in the podcast. It's 24 hours later, not quite. I've slept over in that wonderful apartment, and then I've driven north for 2.5 hours, and I've landed in San Remo. Not in the usual hotel we stay in, not in the Hotel Paradiso, but in the Hotel Grand Londra, appropriately enough, which is a Belle Époque faded splendour of a hotel. And I, as you can probably hear, I've stepped outside from my second floor hotel room, and I'm on the balcony overlooking the Mediterranean. It's been an overcast morning, and the sun is out now, and the Tyrrhenian Sea is sparkling and this time tomorrow, Milan San Remo will be in full cry. They'll probably just be on the Passo del Torchino and getting ready for the descent towards the coast. Bring it on! Well, this is simply just a bit of continuity voiceover, as it's known in the trade, to link the item that you've just heard to the next item that you're going to hear, which is my reconnaissance run over the Poggio, which nearly broke me. It took me an hour and 45 minutes. I had to run out to the Poggio and then back over the Poggio and then back to the hotel. And as I say, I'm no longer the youngest, and it's the longest run I've done in quite a while. Anyway, here it comes, and this has been recorded from the hotel bar of the Hotel Londra, actually, strangely, jumping ahead in time, in the evening after the end of Milan San Remo. So I'm going to hold the suspense in check by not telling you who actually won today. And we'll go back in time to my reconnaissance run of the Poggio. I think I've got this right anyway. You know what the score is.
Right, coming off the Poggio. Here's the famous right turn. Positioning absolutely critical as we hit the Poggio. This is fun. Not halfway up. Oh God. San Remo. Somewhere down there's my hotel. Okay, this is just about the only part of the climb that has a significant gradient. And it's not crazy at all. It's just that little steep section though. 1.5k from the top. Something like that where somebody might want to do a move like that. Vanderpool, looking at you. Talking of which, there he is. That's new. Very good. Oh, hang on, there's more. There's more. Who have you got here? So that was Vanderpool. Pog Archer. And, I don't know, is that Ganna? Is that Luke Rowe? That's one of yours. I'm actually inside the village of Poggio now, and it flattens right off to the top of the climb. And that's it, that's the famous left turn. Which I'm going to attack now. No, I bet not. Yeah, take it easy.
Well, frankly, there's absolutely no way that I would have been able to do that run if I hadn't persisted with my AG1 habit, which has been empowering me to take ownership of my health now for well over a year. It's designed by the Boffins, who understand this kind of thing, a comprehensive and convenient blend of over 70 high-quality ingredients, including vitamins, minerals, whole food source, nutrients, and more, all of which comes in a single and very tasty scoop that just takes seconds to mix each morning. And ultimately, supporting your brain, heart, energy, and immune health, which is incredibly important when you reach my age and you have a challenge ahead of you, like running up and over the Poggio for no reason. Absolutely. Basically, AG1 is there to support your body's everyday needs. And it's not every day that I actually ride over an iconic Italian climb, but that's what I did yesterday. So AG1 is there to make you healthy and keep your habits beautifully easy for you. Just one scoop once a day in a glass of water, all ready for you in less than 1 minute. If you want to take ownership of your health, as Pete to spectacular effect, David also to spectacular effect, and I to much lesser effect, to be honest, have done in the past, then try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D plus 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. It's very simple. Go to drinkag1.com/neverstraysfar. That's drinkag1.com/neverstraysfar. Check it out.
Well, it's race day, and here we are once again.
Matt Stevens is just finishing off his social media, his massive social media. Well, no, carry on.
I'm transcribing. I'm using an app to put the graphics on the screen to sort of, so you've got like words, whatever you call that.
You are a next level influencer, aren't you?
Well, apparently it helps with traction, Ned.
What, internet traction?
Yes.
Yeah.
But no, it's great, isn't it? We're here. Yeah. We just had a lovely coffee. I don't know if you've mentioned...
I haven't mentioned it yet, but it's obviously it's a pressing issue, isn't it?
It is a big issue. I mean, racing aside, which I've no doubt we will touch on, I imagine, is we think, don't we? We frequent a little cafe on the finishing straight, not far from the finish on the Via Roma last year, a really good place where we had a lovely coffee. You went back to buy some wine.
Yep.
So we thought immediately, let's go back there this morning.
Yep.
But Ned, could we find it?
I know. No is the answer.
No, I sort of threw that back to you. Yeah.
Sorry, I forgot to actually answer your question. Yeah, we couldn't find it. It's a ghost cafe. No. It's disappeared. And it's not the sort of fly-by-night pop-up cafe situation, was it?
Oh, no.
It was a properly well-established, wood-panelled, kind of like solid chairs,
yep.
Been there for years,
yep.
You know, big counter, like old boy behind the... Actually, he was quite a youngish chap, wasn't he?
He was.
But he was wearing, like, crisp white shirt and a black, you know, apron. That, it was that kind of vibe, wasn't it?
It was there
to stay, Matt.
It was there. We were there twice. There's no doubting that it existed, but we were left utterly flummoxed.
Yeah.
And in a state of, I don't know, semi-disbelief, so we went somewhere else, didn't we?
Yeah, but, which was fine.
It was great.
Had a dog in it.
Had a dog in it. I took a photo of the dog, quite a woolly dog.
A little nibble in my bag on the way out.
Nibbled your bag, didn't he? And we bought a new bag today, didn't we?
Yeah, a gonad, we call it. Bag for life.
Bag for life. With interesting engineering, with the straps right around.
The reason we had to do that is because we had to do our annual trip to the Conad City Express, or whatever it's called, down in the port.
On the coast.
Yeah, right on the coast. By all the super yachts that are parked up there. And we go in once a year, regular as clockwork, and we pick up pretty much the same sort of mix, but we're really pleased with our, you know, we've got a 6-hour marathon coming up of commentary.
We're just good at it. We've got a system, and obviously we're not exactly up against it now. There's about 25 minutes before we go on air, so it's quite, and we get here about an hour before, so getting it right in the supermarket is quite key.
Yeah.
So first up, nuts.
Always.
Hit the nuts first.
But that's partly because even a small Italian supermarket like that seems to have three distinct separate sections that all sell nuts.
The same thing.
Nuts and fruit nuts.
Slightly, I think exactly the same nuts, but slightly differently packaged.
Yeah.
And it throws you, didn't it? But we didn't buy into that. We just went for a big tub of nuts, nearly €7 we paid.
It was a lot.
It's quite expensive.
It was a lot.
Still, but then
we've got a long drive to Milan tomorrow, so we factored. We don't need to go into this much detail, perhaps, but we also picked up, what else did we pick up?
We picked up
two different types of water.
Two different types, so fizzy and flat. There's only two, I believe, isn't there?
Yeah.
And then we picked up two smoothies. Yeah. We picked up a bunch of bananas, some fragola, which for those who don't speak Italian, is strawberries.
Yeah,
for fragole.
Yeah.
And then we had a couple of bags of nonsense, a couple of Haribo bags. Biscuits.
Yeah, the Haribo brands we got were Crazy Mix.
And Up 1-2-3.
1-2-3 Up.
1-2-3 Up. 1-2-3 Up,
one,
yeah.
1-2-3 Up.
And the biscuits are called Cracky Up, I think, as well, or something. Super Up.
It's just funny, isn't it? And then I made my way back to our commentary position, which I think we've outlined, you know, a couple of years running, really.
Yeah.
It's not on the finish line as it used to be. It's overlooking the toilets. But it's also the middle of the piazza where the Zone Technique is laid out, just off the Via Roma. We can see the famous balcony that kind of overlooks the finish line itself.
Yeah.
But we can also see these tall palm trees and these very elegant Belle Epoque buildings either side, a glorious sunlight now just falling into the square. But where all the trucks are parked up, there's this little lush bit of parkland, a little grassy bit in the middle that you have to kind of walk through to get to the truck. And I was sort of absent-mindedly walking through there, Matt, and I'd bang my head really hard on one of those palm fronds.
They're quite hard. I'm surprised you didn't like poke yourself in the eye. It's actually quite dangerous, isn't it?
Well, if you look, they're kind of serrated. They've got kind of like little barbs on the, you know, so I'm quite lucky I didn't come away with a serious gash to the head.
Yeah, because you woke up this morning, I believe, and
and
you had a back spasm, which you relayed to me on the approach to the breakfast.
I thought you could identify with that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always getting back spasms now. When we're slightly older gents, aren't we? I say we're in the late summer of our lives.
Not the primavera.
No.
Oh, the race of the falling leaves.
The race of the falling leaves.
The swinging
really.
Legs. Yeah.
But I'm properly, I'm buzzing, actually.
Well, there's
really
this,
excited.
There is this kind of like thing hanging over the race of the thing that's distinctly hanging over this particular edition of the race, the
5th,
thank you. No, is it? No, it's the 105th Milano-Torino. I think it's more than that for Milan-Torino. Anyway.
I was 118th.
Well, 16th. I'll have to get this right.
It's over 100.
In a couple of minutes, I'll be saying this on air.
I think it might be the 118th.
Yeah, I think you're right.
how many Milano? So Milano Torino is the oldest, but it didn't run for 30 years.
Exactly.
So this is
it's 20 years. Milano Torino is 20 years older than Paris Roubaix.
Yeah, 1876. 76. Yeah.
So the fact that it's only into its 105th edition suggests it paused repeatedly throughout.
Yeah,
which it did. That's less. Why are we talking about this? The thing that hangs over this edition of Milan-San Remo that is different is the fact that Pogacar, whose progress, if you look in his three previous attempts to win this race, he's got better, he's got closer, but he's not quite made it to the podium yet, and let alone win it. So how does he do? And last year, the kind of learnings from last year, I think, were this is going to be hard for me to win, partly because of the course itself, the Ciprese and Poggio aren't quite there for him to do the damage, but also because he's up against this particular generation of racers who are his equal on these climbs, and it's very hard to engineer a situation where you can see how he wins. So the suspicion hanging over the race is that UAE might try something more long range and more adventurous, and if that happens, I think all bets are off. I think it could be absolutely thrilling. To wit, I think we mean really, really ride the Cipressa hard to try and whittle it down.
I think that is the rumour, and I think one of the coaches of UAE, one of the DSs, has gone on record to say that's what somebody needs to do, and read between the lines there. They're going to ride that very, very quickly and just see what happens. But I think it might be super, super hard Cipressa. The wind could be favourable. It's actually, there's not too much wind today, although
it's very still.
But it will be in helping them rather than not, which is always good for the race. But no, I think they're going to have to do something a little bit inventive. But there's not a lot of space to be inventive in this race. There really isn't. So the narrow focus is the Cipressa. I do think we will see fireworks there and maybe a slightly reduced group. And then I think it's going to be two phases for Tadej. Is his team try and break things up on the Cipressa and then to soften legs and he goes again. So I don't like, but everybody else, it's just, I think it's one attack for the likes of Van der Poel and just following. But Tadej has to do it differently.
And the three interesting debutants that I highlighted. Olaf Koy, I think that's interesting. Lawrence Pithy.
Pithy.
On his Paris Nice showing, that boy's capable of a lot.
And
just from a Never Strays Far Trinity perspective as well, because we've been talking about him for years and he's a friend of the pod. He's been on it regularly. Luke Lamptey makes his
definitely.
Debut. I'd just be really curious to see how he goes.
Yeah. I've just as an outsider, but not for the win, because he'll be riding for Tadej, Isaac Del Toro, the winner of the Tour de l'Avenir. He's had an amazing year. I mean, he's hardly even an outsider now, but it seems like he's been around for ages. He could be one of the key riders along with Wellens today, so watch out for Del Toro doing some damage on the Cipressa as well.
Yeah, all right. So the next bit of the podcast will be either... it depends whether I remember to press record, but in theory I might do a little bit of the intro and a little bit of the end, and then that'll probably be it in terms of the podcasting from Milan-San Remo until after the race. Few days in cycling carry as much meaning as today, the longest race of any year, the gentle, slow building of tension over hours of anticipation before the time-honoured dual ascent of the Cipressa and Poggio provoke a cascade of attacks, one of which will go all the way to the Via Roma and into history. For the 115th time, it's Milan-San Remo.
Did a 90k recon, they did the Tre Capi, they did the Cipressa.
So I'm whispering now just because I'm taking a little break for the first time today in commentary, and I've left Matt manfully to struggle on his own at the moment. They are on the coastal road. We've got a breakaway of 10 riders up the road, a gap of 2 minutes, 6 seconds, 125 kilometres still to go. And Matt is talking about the Poggio.
There's a lot of rutted surfaces as you approach the Poggio itself. I notice on the right hand side there's a lot.
There'll be plenty more Poggio banter before we get to the end.
Yes, Mr. Steven, Matt Pedersen, little check. Here comes Michael Matthews, the sprint is opened up. Pedersen like a rocket on the right-hand side. Pidcock beaten, Michael Matthews, and there is Jasper Philipsen trying to get across the line in first place. It's going to be Matthews, is it? Michael Matthews, Jasper Philipsen. You take your pick, Matt. I do not know. Neither of them celebrated. Philipsen wants to know the answer. Did he get there? Well, I don't know. He doesn't know.
We don't know. What an exciting, chaotic finale of Milano San Remo. I think we might be looking at the winner. But look at the speed. 56
yes,
points. He's got it.
He has got it. Wow.
Best beers in Italy.
Well, Matt's just bimbling around talking about beer when I'm trying to do a professional podcast.
I didn't realise you were podding at that particular point. So is it on now?
Yeah, the pod machine is up and running. So and obviously I forgot to press record when we went towards the final.
I've got it all on video, but with pretty good audio, so you can have that and just crank it a bit and drop it into the pod.
Whenever. We can put it now. Well, either it's going to appear now. Oh, okay. Well, no, I'll tell you what.
Drop it in and say, let's segue into it. And yeah. I've got the last...
Okay. So if you can WhatsApp it to me or something, I'll do something clever.
Keep this in the pod as well, this bit.
Yeah, no, this is great, but this is good podding. But also I think we need to say that this may be technically beyond me, in which case if you don't hear it now, that's because it's technically beyond me. But if you do, it's going to sound like this.
You could...
Yeah, cue.
Wow, that was good, wasn't it?
It was well done.
What a finish. Exciting, wasn't it? It was exciting, because there's a visual part to what you just saw, because to make the sounds that we made and to talk it through, we had to... I recorded it, and I was... You were commentating, and I was up and down. My arm, it was just the Tom Pidcock bit.
Yeah.
When he launched across to Sobrero.
Obviously Van der Poel going on the front changed everything, but looked like the right move. Well, it was the right move. It was the right move.
At that point, for him, it was the right move. And we talked about this in the booth, and a little debrief once our coverage had finished. Hiya, mate.
That's my wife,
though.
Could I get a photograph?
This is Laurie. Yeah.
Okay.
Hello. We missed you the other year at Harrogate. We ended up having to have you.
All right, okay.
She fancied him as well.
All right. Okay. Well, just, what's your name? Hello.
Don't hold your bike while you do the thingy. I'll hold your bike.
I think it's just a picture of the three of us. Are you doing your podcast?
Yeah, it's a podcast.
Yeah, you're on the
podcast. Sorry. What's your name? Really, it's Claire.
Hello, Claire.
Hello, nice to meet you.
There we go. That's great podcasting, that. People will enjoy that. Yeah, nice to meet you, Claire. Did you enjoy the race? Where did you watch it from?
Top of the Poggio.
Fantastic. Did you see Pogacar attack?
We did. I was knackered from the suppressor. I managed it up the Poggio. Had a beer at the top, I'll confess, and watched them attack. And I'm thinking, how the hell did he not win it from the top?
I know. Well, it's a long way to, cycling, isn't it? It's complicated. It's complicado.
Yeah. Yeah, it's complicated. For my legs, everything's complicated.
It's a complicated day.
Nice to meet you. Love the programmes.
Thanks. Cheers.
All right. We might see you at the top of the Tourmalet in the Tour de France or at Nice, because we're coming back for the last 3-4 stages.
Well, definitely look out for you. And you're quite a hard man to miss because you're wearing lots of high vis. Very sensible.
Good luck.
Keep up. Yeah.
Cheers. Thanks, mate.
Keep up the good work. So,
1 minute. Just 1 minute. Sorry, we've got some. Come on, lads.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, hello. Yeah. Hiya. You're right. How you doing?
I'm a Welshman from Sydney.
Oh, are you? Right.
So we were high fiving each other, thinking, and an Englishman from Sydney.
All right. Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you.
What are your names?
Andrew and Julian.
Nice to meet you both.
Yeah, we thought Bling had won it, and we high fiving each other.
We were there. Yeah. The end, very close.
Yeah. A bit more speed over the line, didn't he?
Yeah,
and it looked like he might.
We were just talking to him. Said, "What was it? He's gonna have nightmares."
Yeah, we just did a chat with Matt Heenan, who said, good day. He went, but he's going to have nightmares.
Your accent is so weird. Yes. Like in the nicest possible way. It's brilliant.
It's a Swansea-Sydney accent.
It's making me feel slightly giddy or something like a little bit disorientated, like the world is tipping on the wrong axis or something like that, because you're literally halfway between Swansea and Sydney, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
Make your mind up, man.
I've lived there 30 years, man. So, we saw the start as well. So we've been skiing in the... Dolomiti, and we came down and
big day out for you driving.
Yeah, nice little trip. So
to here, yeah.
60th birthday. So
what today?
A couple of weeks.
Congratulations.
Yeah, sort of the world for him.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, what a trip.
You a quick selfie?
Yeah.
The legend.
I'll just have to cover this with some audio. So carry on. Doing carry on what we're doing. So now we're lining up for a shot. So there we go.
That's it.
There we go. All right. Nice to meet you both.
Hope the pod goes well.
Thanks very much,
guys. We'll listen.
All right.
We'll find you.
Cheers. All right. Well, that was actually a really good race summary, wasn't it?
It was.
Well, I mean, friend, Claire's husband, he saw the Pogacar attack and he said, how did he not? Well, let's answer his question. He said, how did he not win that from there?
Just didn't have enough of a gap, did he? It was great. It was that was the little surprise move. We We knew there was going to be, just giving Andrea, our producer, a bit of a wave. It's quite a busy sort of lot of other sort of cameo roles in this element of the pod, isn't there?
Yeah.
But no, that second attack by Tade was great, and it was I think you were commentating on it, and I couldn't help it. I was like, whoa, because I'm so invested in this sport, Ned, that you can't help it. You know, with moments like that, it's a joy to watch that final, that last 3 or 4 minutes on the Poggio was brilliant, and Pogacar threw everything he could at it, but he just needed another four or five seconds. That's what you needed. He just didn't have it.
Close.
And when he
close.
Went, he didn't open the gap that he needed to. Yeah. And I wouldn't say he was straight on him, but Van der Poel, by the first hairpin, was pretty much on his wheel, wasn't he?
It shows you how good Van der Poel is that didn't break him, because it was an unexpected attack. I don't think Van der Poel saw that coming, because
no.
It looked for all the world like when Tade had done his attack on the steep section and then sat up effectively.
It was prolonged as well, wasn't it? It's like, that's what he does.
Everyone thought, us included, that's it. That was the Pogacar attack. He's going to settle for something else. Then boom, he went again. And he went when Van der Poel was like in around that fourth, fifth wheel of that little group. So he picked the exact right moment.
Smart as well as strong. And that's the thing about Tade. He can recover like nobody else. It's the very, very definition of ultimate fitness is recovering after a winning that broke most people. But went again, snapped the elastic. But he just ran out of tarmac. If he'd had another 400 metres, maybe would have opened up enough of a gap, but it wasn't to be.
Enough of a gap,
sorry.
No, it's fine. How many words do you reckon we've used today?
I've got a lip cramp. How many? The race was 6 hours 30,
was
25?
It? Yeah. Okay, 6.5 hours. How many words do we use in a minute? I'll do the maths, I'll get my calculator.
Probably a word a second.
Yeah, so that's 60 words per minute. So that's 60 times 60 is... Maths. 3,000 per hour, you're talking 3,600 words times 6. Can you do that? 3,600 times 6 is 21,600 words we used today.
So that's basically, it's about half a novel, isn't it?
A shortish novel. It'd be a novella. It's a novella's length.
Yeah.
We wrote a novella in words.
And we gave it to people for free.
I don't know, some of the channels might be
subscription channels, so just take that back. But yeah, approximately, let's round it to, but like between 20 and 25,000 words safely.
Safely.
Shared out, of course, we did turns.
Yeah.
A bit like Sylvain Dillier and Jacopo Mosca, I feel we are. We're just like slugging away, just speaking, giving words out, describing things, saying things. Then I'll do a few words. You come through. You do a few words. That's what we were today. Yeah. We're like word domestiques.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, yeah, that's true. I like that. I think we're a little bit. What's it called? Polti. I've just been saying the name.
No, it's right. Polti Cometa.
We're a little bit.
They make Hoovers.
Who do?
They're talking about Hoover, like a vacuum manufacturer.
Polti.
Yeah.
Do you know, I didn't know that.
Yeah, just like car vacuum cleaners, domestic cleaners.
I Jumbo Visma'd it right towards the end.
Only once, mate. I think I got a clean sheet.
That's the first one. I didn't do any at Paris-Nice, but I did a Jumbo Visma just when it mattered as well, in the commentary. You gave me a little consolatory.
I did.
You got to 288 kilometres. You got to 265 kilometres and you Jumbo Visma, you gave me a little bad luck, mate.
I was like, oh, mate, yeah. It was like you just missed a penalty, wasn't it? Kind of thing.
Oh, he's done it, yeah.
That was Alan Jett giving us a little bit of wave.
That was nice.
Good lad, off into the twilight, really.
I wonder if he'll be getting in his black camper van thing, the minibus.
He's got a suit jacket on, he's looking quite... I reckon he might have another appointment at a nice, like a wine bar somewhere.
He's wearing, let's just paint
he's like got
he's
evening wearing, wear on, isn't he? Evening
well,
wear.
I don't know, he's wearing a summery sort of light blue blouse on with some
linen jacket.
Yeah, like linen jacket, he's got his bag just slung over his right shoulder, he's on the phone to someone quite important, and he's wearing white trainers. And there's a high probability he's got ankle socks on underneath that as well.
Yeah, it's a worrying probability. But he's happy. And what I'm not going to do is knock him for that. But
eat into his happiness. Well, anyway, that's what a week we've had, eh?
Best part of a week. Know what we've not mentioned? We haven't actually said the words Jasper and Philipsen in our summary.
I know.
But yeah, we just did that. I mean, what a win. I mean, I think we've got to talk about briefly the sacrifice as soon as... It became quite clear that Mattia wasn't going to win. He just went all in, and that was wonderful. Just turned it, didn't he? And all in, had to bring back Mohoric first, then was chasing Sobrero, and then had to bring back Pidcock, and then the sprint opened up, and Pidcock was swept away, and Philipsen won it. just brilliant. There's so much to talk about in that, just in the last 2-3 Ks.
I was relieved that we kind of had in the back of our mind Jasper Philipsen, because we hadn't seen him on, but it was like, oh, is he there? Like, yeah. Posing that question at the right time was kind of, with hindsight, the right thing to do. And then you absolutely nailed that moment where, you know, sticks it on the front. I think I said in the commentary something about Amstel Gold, and you went, well, yeah, but then there's Philipsen to ride for. And yeah, some rider, isn't he? 26 years of age. Yeah. So
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I don't know whether it was a vintage Milan San Remo or not.
In a way, that's a kind of a pointless question, though, isn't it? Because they all matter.
Each one's different. Yeah. It did what it says on the tin, and then in the last 20-odd K, we were royally entertained. There's a lot to talk about, and again, it's another a record-breaking one as well. So it's the fastest Milan San Remo we've ever commentated on.
it rattled by. Anyway, that's the end of this. Podcast. Thank you very much, Matt.
Thanks, Nish.
I've run out of words, mate. I'm all done.
You've done about.
You
have
no. I said to you, just read it.
Well, it's pretty much nonsense now, isn't it? So you better switch that off.
Bibble. Yeah, whatever. Bye.